Tom, our audio is going in the next room. Microphone on, please.
Got it.
Good morning. Today is January 31st, 2020. It is 9 a.m. I'm Victoria Bowman. I'm the chair, and I'm calling the Arizona State Board of Massage Therapy meeting to order. I do reserve the right to change the order of items published on the agenda except for public hearing as set forth at a specific time. We are going to have a presentation by FSMTB, which is the Federation of State Massage Therapy Boards. Can we go right into that, Tom?
Madam Chair, do you want to go ahead and just finish the items that are on the calendar prior to that item? And we'll have to do a roll call also. The call to the public you can put after the 9 o'clock workshop. If you want to do the declarations of conflict of interest and the minutes and a roll call, that would.
Before meeting and upon a vote of the majority of the quorum, the board may go into executive session to obtain legal advice from the board's attorneys pursuant to Arizona Revised Statute 38-431.03A3 on the items listed on the agenda. All meeting attendees whose presence is not required in an executive session may remain in the board meeting room when the board withdraws to chambers for an executive session. Any and all legal action by board members will only take place in the executive session. Okay, roll call. Ms. Cisneros, will you?
Yes. Chairwoman Bowman?
Present.
Vice Chairwoman Clark?
Present.
Mr. McLean?
Present.
Mr. Ortega?
Present.
And Mr. Ramsey?
Present.
Thank you. We have a quorum, Madam Chair.
Call to the public. Pursuant to ARS 38-401.01H, the board may make an open call to the public during a public meeting, subject to reasonable time, 3 minutes, place and manner restrictions, to allow individuals to address the public body on any issue within the jurisdiction of this public body. However, members of the board are not allowed to discuss or take legal action on matters raised during an open call to the public unless the matters are properly noticed for discussion and legal action. The board, however, may ask staff to review a matter or may ask that a matter be placed on a future agenda. Do we have any call to public? Okay. Thank you. Okay. I don't have, did you fill out a slip for call to public?
Madam Chair, they can speak with your permission and fill the slip out afterwards if they would.
Please come forward. Perfect.
Hello.
Hi, and please give us your name.
My name is Christine Huber, and I work for the American Massage Therapy Association in government relations. State and the regulatory affairs. I didn't know we were going to do public comment at the beginning, but I just had a few comments to make regarding the upcoming human trafficking report and just reiterate the AMTA's position that FSMTB's human trafficking report came out in 2017. It is our stance, it was our stance then, and it is our stance now that the very awful issue of human trafficking should not fall on the shoulders of legitimate massage practitioners to solve, to get rid of, to prosecute. That falls with law enforcement. There are some issues with the Polaris report that they cite. Again, that data is also old. So I think AMTA would like to see further research before any serious decisions are made that can affect legitimate practitioners.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Is there any other call to public? Thank you. Declaration of conflict of interest. Does anyone on the board have reason? Okay. Review, discussion, and possible action on board meeting minutes.
Madam Chair, I make a motion that we approve the open minutes from the December 16th monthly meeting.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion carries. Okay, now to the point. Six, briefing by representatives from the Federation of State Massage Therapy Board. We have Executive Director Deborah Persinger. We have Director Tom Ryan. We have Director of Government Relations Lorena Hayes regarding human trafficking and detecting license fraud. So I would like those individuals to please come forward. I thank you very much for taking your time out of your busy day to give us some important information. And we know that good decisions are made with knowledge. And so thank you for being here today.
Madam Chair, can I ask the board to change positions and go to those chairs at that table and for the presenters to take your place up front?
So if you top, so all confidential information is confined.
Can you hear me from here? Good morning, everybody. My name is Lorena Haynes. I am the Director of Government Relations for the Federation of State Massage Therapy Boards. My purpose here is to familiarize you a little bit with our organization prior to us getting into some more serious conversation. A little bit about our history. The Federation is a nonprofit organization of state massage therapy boards. We're not an association of massage professionals. Our purpose is to support the state boards in their efforts to protect the public. And we've been around since 2005. A group of regulators got together and decided that it was important to pool their resources to be able to meet a number of tasks and issues that they had identified back then. One of them is the need for consistent scopes of practice. Another one was the need for a valid and reliable licensing exam that you're going to hear about more later on. And there also was a need for a common database, and that, again, is a theme that you're going to hear about as a solution to a lot of the issues that are coming up. Technically, our structure is a 501c3. We're a nonprofit, and we are composed of jurisdictional agencies, and they're the ones that tell us what to do. So the regulatory boards are the ones that are running the Federation of State Massage Therapy Boards. Currently, we have 46 members, and whenever changes are made, it's done at the voting and discretion of the membership. We have a number of programs and services that we offer to our member boards. I'm going to go through these quickly just so you have an understanding of where those programs fit in what we're doing here. We have the massage and bodywork licensing exam. You're going to hear more about that in a few minutes. That's a national licensing exam that's used to determine the entry level knowledge of massage therapists that are coming out of school and or are seeking to be licensed. We have a team that helps massage candidates if they have difficulty with passing the exam. So we have a personal system there where we will talk with them. We have a model practice act, which is language for statutory language that was created by a group of massage regulators. So the people that write the laws have gotten together and created this Model Practice Act that is very useful for our membership. We have newsletters once a month to our membership and schools. We have a continuing education registry for providers of continuing education. We have a massage therapy licensing database, and our licensing database includes a lot of really important information, not only licensing, but we're looking at school information, exam information, disciplinary information, and these topics. And these topics are going to be vital for our membership to be able to check and make sure that the person that they're looking at that's coming to the state for licensure really does have the credentials, and you're able to see the history of them without having to go to 50 different places to look up this information. So this is really vital to some of the solutions that we have. We have a regulatory education and competence hub. This is an online learning management system that represents sponsored courses from our member boards. This is really important because in just a few weeks, we're going to be having a human trafficking course that will be coming out on now, and we just recently opened this up for for the profession. We have created continuing education standards that could be adopted by our member boards. We have an annual report if you're interested in anything to do with our organization on our website. You can go there. It's our efforts at being transparent to the public. So there's financial information, what we do with our money. It talks about the statistics of our exam and the different volunteer committees that we have. We also have an education record center. This was adopted in 2017. What happens here is schools put education records into it, and they're matched to candidate applications. This is a security measure to make sure that everybody who's taking our exam went to an approved school. My office, the government relations office, does tracking for our member boards. So we look at bills, we help them out, we make sure that there's lines of communication that are open. We have an annual meeting. At the annual meeting, we have delegates from each of our members, and those delegates vote on our board of directors, any resolutions that are out there, and any other thing that comes before them that is put on the table for our membership to vote on. We also have a massage board executive summit, and this is the same sort of thing, but for executive directors. So this is the staff side of it. Did I lose? Oh. So this is the staff side. We help staff as well, and they're able to come to this meeting, which will be in April, and they'll speak to one another. They are really talking to their peers about what's going on, and they're able to communicate back and forth. And then we also, in 2017, have created this human trafficking report that you're going to hear a lot of in just a few minutes. One of the latest things that we've got we're establishing now is a human trafficking, an establishment licensing task force. And the tasks for this committee are to study the efficacy of massage establishment regulation, also to identify language that may impede the enforcement of massage-related human trafficking. That's important to take a look at it from the law enforcement side and what we can do to work with law enforcement. And then we're going to draft a model law that eliminates ambiguities in state law, and this will be a model for establishment licensing. So that's just a brief overview of who we are and what we do. And now I would like to turn this presentation over to Tom Ryan, who's going to speak to you more about the human trafficking.
Thanks, Lorena. Thank you, Arizona Board, for having us here. How did we get to establishment licensing? We've been talking about human trafficking within the Federation for a number of years now, and we decided to set up a human trafficking task force report after a 2015 Delegate Assembly resolution asked us to do that. So our members asked us to do this, to take a look at this. The ultimate product of this task force was a report, which all of you should have. We have some extra if you'd like them. I do encourage you to take a look at this because it is comprehensive and is a product of a lot of work by volunteers on a task force. What did it do? It describes the prevalence and impact of human trafficking in the massage profession, recommends solutions to human trafficking in the illicit massage business problem. Those solutions are broken down in two different ways. One, what can the FSMTB do? And two, what can jurisdiction boards do to combat human trafficking? On the state board side, what the task force recommended was that states participate in the massage therapy licensing database that Lorena mentioned. That means states are encouraged to report information to the MTLD, and not all states are currently participating. The more states that participate, obviously, the more information and the better it's going to be for all involved. We encourage states to query the database for licensing and disciplinary purposes. Again, this is an information resource and storinghouse, and the more participation we have nationally, the more useful it's going to be as a tool. The task force talks about massage school oversight to ensure that state-approved schools conduct rigorous programmatic or specialized reviews. As I'm sure you're aware, schools are involved in many ways. There are problems with fraud, problems with diploma mills, and those kinds of things. And those problems are interlinked with human trafficking in the profession. So the task force had to take this on. And one of the things that they're asking states to do is ensure that schools do conduct those kinds of reviews. And then follow up with audits after the initial review to make sure schools maintain their diligence. Consider massage establishment regulation. That was another recommendation of the task force for states to take a look at. Now, the task force did say that it would be wise for the Federation to create a task force so that states had something to go on to begin with, given the fact that states aren't always expert in this area. In addition to the fact that the research around massage regulation is still fairly new, so it does require a closer look. Work closely with law enforcement. I think all boards should be doing that if you're not already. That's vitally important. Educate your board members and staff on human trafficking and illicit massage businesses. On the other side, solutions for the Federation recommended by the task force. Create an establishment licensing task force. That's been done by resolution of the Delegate Assembly. Promote human trafficking awareness. Develop trainings. Create partnerships. This board's doing that. Evaluate pros and cons of a uniform national accrediting body for schools and programs. Again, this is the school side of things, where you find that a lot of this is interrelated with the exam, with the schools. There's fraud in these different areas that lead, in a lot of ways, back to human trafficking operations. And you can't address human trafficking without addressing the possibility of a uniform national accrediting body for schools and programs. Currently, it's state-based. There are a lot of differences. There may be benefits to standardization, where loopholes can be closed and cross-border issues can be resolved. Continue to develop and expand MTLD. Okay, so in the report, when we went to do our literature search and our research, we found that there's very little out there in terms of comprehensive research. One organization that has done in-depth research is a group called Polaris. It's a nonprofit. It is victim-focused. It is focused on the top levels of human trafficking operations. So you need to know that when you're looking at the data and reading the reports. So there are several slides here that reference Polaris data. And so, as I mentioned, there's not a lot of other information out there at this time, and Polaris has done a pretty comprehensive job of reviewing by focus group information they've received from victims, service providers, law enforcement, and there's also a hotline where they've analyzed data from the hotline. So they've got a good start on it, and our report did rely on information which I need to point out has been updated. The Human Trafficking Task Force report came out in the fall of 2017. They produced a very lengthy report, which is online on their website, in January of 2018, and then followed up with another report. So their data is somewhat updated from our report. What I'm citing here then is not data from our report, but data I took from those reports from Polaris to describe the problem for you. Massage-related human trafficking is the second most common form of human trafficking. That's second only to escort services. It's a $2.5 billion a year industry. There are more than 9,000 IMBs in the U.S., illicit massage businesses, by Polaris' count. That's astonishing. Strip malls, commercial fronts, highways. One thing about it is that the women involved in human trafficking are often under extreme pressure. There's debt, blackmail, psychological manipulation. Their immigration status is uncertain, so there's a fear of deportation. There's a fear of law enforcement at times. There's a lot of shame involved. There are threats made to family of traffickers. There are language barriers. And what Polaris found is that typically human traffickers are mothers aged 30 to 55. There are also cultural factors. Human trafficking involves at least one of three: force, fraud, or coercion. Often they are part of a larger network of illicit massage businesses or organized crime. They're connected to another business, maybe registered as another business, maybe a shell company, no identification of beneficial owners. In fact, only 21% of IMBs name the owner. There's money laundering. So where are the ports of entry for massage human trafficking, according to Polaris? There are three of them: LA, San Francisco, and New York. And so you'll see on the map, obviously, Arizona is not far from two of the three largest ports of entry. Men and women typically play different roles, according to the Polaris data. Men act as assistant managers often, drivers, recruiters, landlords, real estate agents, money launderers. Women, on the other hand, often it was found, are the owners or the managers, the frontline controllers of the operations. And it's often a family-run, family-owned business. There are multinational rings that have been discovered, as in Houston, for example. So it's not just local, it's not just national, multinational in some cases. There's a system of rotation between illicit massage businesses where human trafficking is involved. About every 2 weeks, women are moved from IMB to IMB in order to avoid detection and to elude law enforcement. Again, it's intrastate, interstate, and national, as well as international. So there's quite a bit of research of what are the indicators of human trafficking, and what are the indicators of massage-based human trafficking is something the Polaris folks focused on as well. The prices for a massage are far below the market rate. Half at some in some cases. They rely on tips. Primary clientele served is male. Entry to the establishment is locked in some cases. There's a buzzer at the entrance. Often side or back door entry. And there are excessive and odd hours. There's a rotation of women. They advertise on other sites. You can go on the internet and find these. Right? Covered windows. Women appear to live at the site. So, regulation. This is what Polaris said. This quote is a good one. Licensing and regulation is an easily exploitable patchwork of state and local laws and ordinances that allows this blatantly illegal industry to survive and thrive in such a public way. This is in part due to the variation of these regulations across locations. So there's regulation shopping. This map shows the states that have a statewide law that when the Establishment Licensing Task Force takes a look at the problem, I'm certain they'll find that a statewide law, if there's going to be any law at all, can be effective in checking the regulation shopping that happens at localities if the statewide regulation is strong enough. Currently, and this data is about 2 years old, 3 years old, 12% of counties regulate establishments, 12% of cities regulate establishments. Some regulate them as sexually oriented businesses, not as health businesses, which doesn't reflect well on massage establishments. So one of the things in the literature is a discouragement of regulating as sexually oriented businesses. So what are some of the strategies that we found? And I want to be clear again that we are not recommending any solution. We're more of a clearinghouse. This is a report that presents information to you. That again, I think that the data on this is so new and studies just need to be done to show the efficacy before anybody can say, well, this definitely 100% works or this may be a good regulatory strategy. So I'm just here to point out what's being done out there and what we're finding. Strong code enforcement is one strategy. Collaboration of the stakeholders, boards, law enforcement, others. There's one jurisdiction that actually has a designated seat on their board for law enforcement. The Tennessee model and the Washington-Utah model of information sharing is good on this. Tennessee's involved law enforcement in a big way, and they've realized very good results from what they've done. Washington and Utah law enforcement there are sharing information between one another through their attorney general's office and elsewhere, and they're having successes. FBI and Homeland Security could be involved. One of the things that Polaris has found is that victims often get re-victimized and that it's important to have a trauma-informed response and to be culturally competent in the approach to illicit massage businesses. That may involve funding for interpreters, as they've done in Missouri, or, for example, an ombudsperson, as in Nevada. Regular inspections, not impeded. Inspectors empowered to provide victim assistance. Ability to fine and shut down the operations. Fines, on the one hand, put financial pressure on the operations, create a paper trail, provide an alert to landlords, and Indianapolis has some experience with this as a success, and provide a source of funding for enforcement. If you're interested in looking further, three, four areas where they've had some successes with fines and shutting down operations, they've been very active in Santa Clara County, San Francisco, Brooklyn, and in Houston. There's been a lot of activity around regulation in those areas. 2017, there was an ordinance proposed in Chicago that got quite a bit of attention. It did not pass, but it was trying to create some innovative regulation would have increased the maximum fine from $500 to $5,000, would have allowed duress and coercion as defenses, would have banned direct passageways from businesses to residences. Okay, ownership and control. An organized crime focus can help to the degree that there's evidence of human trafficking by organized crime in a jurisdiction. Designated establishment manager, requiring that there be one designated, okay? Part of the game here, a big part of it is eluding the authorities. Pinning down who actually is in charge, who owns, who operates, that's important in any way that you can do it. Shell companies, same issue, right? It's hide the ball. Identify a real person, not an LLC, as a primary owner and operator on the application. Document who's liable for the business. Update the ID information, residence and business addresses, unique ID numbers from a driver's license or a passport. Third parties present a problem. So it's good to close loopholes. If it's credentialed as another organization type, that's one loophole. Unlicensed practice is common. North Carolina, they created a misdemeanor around employing unlicensed personnel. Criminal background checks can help isolate and define the owner and the background of the people that are running the IMBs. Involving fingerprinting, Texas has an experience in this. Specifying owner duties, that's something Nebraska has tried. Tracking previous ownership, Nebraska is trying to do this as well. Tennessee requires a photograph. If you can find a photograph with interviews, that can close loopholes. Massachusetts is regulating by single location versus multiple location. Having a duty to report unprofessional conduct on the establishment, on the owner, may be something to look at. This is something that improves and increases the amount of information out there, and also because in our report we identified endangerment of the employees as well as the public as the biggest problem of massage-related human trafficking. A duty to report can provide information at an earlier stage and prevent further harm down the line. Ensure all massage therapists are licensed. This is common in regulatory areas where there's regulation. Those licenses then can be checked when an inspection is done. Make sure that a licensee is required there on site. When ownership changes hands, there should be a notification or reapplication. Requirement to background check all employees, as Hillsborough County, Florida is doing. Okay, another strategy. That was ownership and control. This has to do with inspections. Polaris recommends unhindered inspections, and I think it's pretty common sense that if they're unhindered, it'll be harder to game the system. Initial inspections and then periodic inspections. Self-inspections, some jurisdictions are using self-inspections. Check for establishment listings or advertisements on other sites. And if you see that something's being advertised, you can check it against an establishment licensing list, and if there's no license, you got a potential problem. Also, it's a good way to see if establishment licensing organizations that may be licensed or have licensed MTs working there are advertising on another site for illicit purposes. Some operations require the display of a license. Some regulatory authorities, that makes it easy on inspection to identify who's working there. Records retention, retaining client records and proof of liability insurance, in addition to who works there. So who works there? Who's visited? Do we have records? That can help to track and trace. Public health protections. Another thing an establishment regulation could do is put in place public health protections that may not be there, requiring certain sanitation, water, restroom, safe passage, lighting, temperature, bed regulations, and equipment regulations. So there are other benefits to massage establishment regulation other than just identifying human trafficking. Is there a complaint procedure in an operation? Should one be required for employees and for clientele? What's the supervision involved? Occupancy. Is there evidence of residence? Entry and exit. Are the exits obscured? Is there a side entrance? Is the front locked? Hours of operation. You're seeing more and more hours of operation regulations where from noon to 5 or 10 p.m. to 5 a.m., 7 a.m., establishments are just closed, or during those hours you need a prescription. So in Florida, there's a new law that prohibits establishment hours between midnight and 5 a.m. unless there's a prescription for the service from an identified healthcare professional. Again, is the front door locked or unlocked? Are licenses displayed? Cleanliness. Solo practice exception. I found that this is also fairly common. And again, this speaks to the fact, I think, that regulation is not one size fits all. Establishment types. And there it is again. It's not one size fits all. Jurisdictions need to be flexible and have flexibility to respond to the situation in their environment, what's close at hand with them. Because massage happens in a lot of different places in different settings that need to be regulated differently. You'll see in salons, spas, shared businesses, student clinics, solo practice, outcalls, special events, residences, fitness centers, chairs, standalone devices, mobile massage. Nebraska has a mobile massage licensing law, if anyone's interested. But the point here is being smart in regulation if you're going to regulate, and using a right touch regulation approach, one that's adaptive, one that responds to each jurisdiction's unique characteristics. There are also different modality types, and this creates problems and can create escape through loopholes. And so I ask, are these other modalities manipulating the soft tissue? And is there one way to create a regulation that captures all of them? Multiple licenses at the same address. That's a potential red flag. So, what are the exemptions in your Practice Act? Are they there for a reason, to protect the public? Or are they creating more harm than good? And is this manipulating the soft tissue? Local zoning. While this is going to be beyond boards like yours, it's something to be aware of, that zoning laws can have an impact, and a pretty significant impact, on the effectiveness of regulation. California found that restricting localities from using their zoning laws to regulate massage establishments was something to avoid, because when they did that, they saw a significant increase in illicit massage businesses in certain areas of the state. So they repealed this law 6 years later. Okay, third area, advertising. This is rampant, false advertising. It's rampant with illicit massage businesses. Unlawful advertising as well. Check other sites as part of the process. Thank you. A lot of this is on open source. So Google searches, if someone comes to you and there's an establishment and you search and you see them on other sites, that's a red flag. There are regulations now that require advertisement of massage to include identifying information, the license for the massage therapist, for example, or the address or the name of the person taking out the ad. This, I'd like to emphasize that routine cross-checks by code enforcement and law enforcement, again, goes to stakeholders working together and everybody having their eyes open globally as to what a particular massage establishment is doing in terms of advertising. But if you see an ad or you're driving down the highway as a code enforcement person or a police officer and you see something being advertised as massage and you look it up, and oh, it's also advertised on a sex site, well then I think you've got an issue, something to follow up on. Houston law defines a massage establishment as any entity that advertises and then permits an inspection of any entity that advertises. So if you're going to advertise, that's in their definition, and we can come in and see what's happening inside. Okay, this is an area that is very important and also something the Federation has taken on directly through task forces and through its day-to-day operation. It's authenticity of information and human trafficking. The fraud and the falsification that's out there is interconnected with human trafficking, and so it's a problem that you need to work on if you're focused on human trafficking, and you need to work on it generally if you want to make sure your licensing process is free of fraud. You'll see it on your licensure and renewal applications. You'll see it with schools. There are diploma mills. We know this. Examination documents and test center fraud. Transcripts. A lot of fraudulent transcripts. The Federation set up a task force called the Authentic Information Review Task Force, which has done a number of things to get at this problem. IDing the types of fraud and falsification is one. Task force has developed tools for jurisdictions, developed best practices regarding fraudulent falsified documents, and identified tools for prosecutors. There's model rule language, and we're going to be working on that with the establishment task force as well, as Lorena mentioned. One thing that I think is very beneficial is the FSMTB's fraud detection workshop, detecting fraud in the licensure process. This is a workshop offered by the Federation to jurisdictions. It's part also of their human trafficking outreach in addition to service to the jurisdictions. It was created by two FAIR task force members, Kimberly Hodge of Tennessee and Latasha Austin of Virginia. Delivered at the FSMTB Executive Director Summits, which occur in the spring of the year. And they do a number of things there. They look at primary source verification, how to identify a fraudulent transcript, three-step application review process, by looking at the appearance of documents, the content, and then the overall look. And this is very hands-on. The examples there are very specific, and it gives you a very good blueprint as to how to identify and detect fraud. And it reviews red flags you should look at. I've passed it along as training material. I think jurisdictions may want to consider doing this as well with your licensing staff, if information can be made available about what are the red flags, especially for new members as you're training new members. So nationally, there's not a lot of data, okay? The FBI has collected some, but my sense is that it could be more complete and more comprehensive. In 2018, what we found is that there were 1,392 reported offenses, according to the FBI. This is human trafficking, not massage-related. This is the totality. Less than half of them were cleared in 2018, so the validation isn't there as it could be as well. But I think the point there is that the enforcement of human trafficking is very difficult. It's tough to prosecute. It's tough to get witnesses. It's tough to create evidence. And so prosecuting it is something that I think is going to evolve over time as more and more is known. So recommendations when vetting education. I think you need to have a good relationship with the school approval authority in your state. That's vital. That's critical, as well as with the federation. Look at the source of the documents. Do they meet state educational requirements? Be in contact with appropriate agencies to verify the information you're seeing. With that, I'd like to conclude, and again, I say thank you. I'm going to turn over now to the Executive Director of the Federation, Deborah Persinger.
Okay, thank you, Tom. Tom Ryan was Executive Director of the Wisconsin Massage Board and works in discipline and compliance for Wisconsin. Also serves on the Federation of State Medical Boards. So, Tom, we appreciate your service to the massage profession and the regulatory community for flying out here today. You can tell I have an accent. I'll try and speak slowly. So what I intend to do is put the face of reality onto what we're dealing with, because this may seem like theoretical things and human trafficking doesn't happen here. In fact, it happens across the nation, and the people that perpetrate this, it's an assault on the legislature in Arizona and the Massage Practice Act that they initiated. It's an assault on the Arizona Massage Board and staff. It's an assault on the licensed, legitimate professionals in Arizona who did the right thing to be qualified therapeutic massage and bodywork therapists. And it's an assault on the citizens of Arizona that this fraud can be perpetrated. So I'll share, this is pretty sanitized, but I'll share with you some examples that actually happen. So one of the benefits of Arizona being a member of the Federation is that they use the National Licensing Exam, MBLEX, Massage and Bodywork Licensing Exam. This is developed by the collective regulatory boards, so there's no cost to the state of Arizona for doing this. But here's some of the fraud that we see. So we work very closely with the state boards, and I know that the team that you have here, Tom, have to look at transcripts, and we work in communication because we have transcripts from all across the country. Sometimes people say they were in school in New Jersey at the same time they're claiming they were in school in California. So the staff have an enormous burden, actually, to detect fraud through these kinds of methods. We also work very closely with law enforcement. So when candidates come to the testing center, we capture their biometric data and the application. We have addresses and contact information. So on a national level, like FBI level, we have a lot of rich data for them in order to do their work. So when we catch people, or we have due process. This is not something we pounce on and accuse people and they're never seen from again. We have due process, legal counsel of all sides is always involved. Here are some of the examples that we get back when we say you can't be, you know, that's a long commute from New Jersey to Phoenix. They Google things, or commonly they'll say, my friend filled out the application for me. This may seem like, you know, it's made up. These are actual responses from people. So another thing that we are able to detect and prevent at the testing, I thought I could navigate this microphone. I'm sorry. I've been sitting out there myself. I know it's really annoying.
Not very clear this one. We're probably changing mics again.
Maybe. Okay. Or I can use my best teacher's voice. So proxy testing. We use very high security test centers, Pearson Professional Centers, to capture the biometric information, digital photograph, and we capture palm vein. So even if somebody goes out to the bathroom in the middle of taking the test, they have to palm vein out and palm vein back in so that they don't trade out with somebody else in the bathroom. So on the left-hand side, candidate A took the test three times. So these are the photos that we captured at the test center. No, nothing extraordinary about that. On the right-hand side, candidate B took the test three times. But what we know is candidate A and B are actually the same person. So they were proxy testing for, candidate A was proxy testing for somebody applying for a license pretending to be candidate B. At the top, unrelated to these pictures, as an example of some questions that we get, an actual innocent little child, I guess, asking if they could take the test for their mother. We've also had people try to change gender. A lady applying to take the MBLEX sent her son in, and he was wearing a wig and a scarf and everything. So I won't comment on parenting, like who asked their kid to do that for them. But anyway, so proxy testing is quite a problem of people trying to get into the profession. So, and then item harvesting, that's a fancy word for cheating, like stealing test questions. This is an actual candidate, a massage. These are not like Googled images or something, I came for shock value today. These are our real candidates trying to infiltrate the legitimate profession. So they've got, you know, cheat notes written on their hand. On the right is an example of somebody who had cheat sheets in the test room. That's not allowed, obviously. And when they got caught, they quickly tried to erase it. You can see that's what those smudge marks are, but, you know, it didn't work in that instance. So here's an example of a candidate who tested. It might be a little bit difficult to see in the back, but if you look up on the left-hand side, the candidate testing is wearing glasses, spectacles, and the arm that goes behind the ear, you know, the bridge on the spectacles, is relatively thin compared to the bottom one where her glasses look a little bit thicker. What happened was on the right-hand side, you can see after about 10 minutes or, you know, a few minutes of testing, she would go out to the restroom. The picture on the right-hand side at the top is taken in the ladies' restroom. She had Velcroed underneath the sink in the ladies' bathroom some spy glasses. And you can see in the bottom, this is the actual glasses, there's a little camera and the bridge thing that goes across the nose. So here's another example of a candidate wearing a, coming into the test room with a camera. This is a still shot, but he was actually, you know, going like a windshield wiper, trying to take pictures of the test screen. So on the right-hand side, that rectangular piece actually is hidden in the sleeve of the shirt, but all that's exposed is that little circle thing that just looks like a regular button. You wouldn't otherwise know. So Again, these are not images I wanted to share. Like, I didn't go on Google and just type in money and get pictures for you. These are actually people, again, trying to, imposters in the massage therapy profession. And there's, Tom said, what was it, $2-point-something billion industry. These are examples, and these are people bragging, like, I can get you into, get a license in, you know, state A, B, or C. There is big money involved. So why is it an issue? Obviously, it's a threat to the integrity of the exam and the reputation. I know alone last year, the Federation spent $1 million on legal fees alone, just on these fraud issues. So the nice thing for you is the taxpayers, you all didn't, the state didn't pay anything of that. None of the states in the United States did. The Federation bears that burden. So that's, you know, an advantage to you. I just flew in here from Colorado where the United States attorney took on a case of a gentleman who was selling fraudulent transcripts across at least 27 states that we know of, and he was just sentenced in court on Wednesday to 15 months in prison, 3 years probation. So we work closely with the FBI on that case as well. So all these things are happening, maybe without your knowledge. This is an example of a school advertising to get people in, saying that they can get them into the massage therapy profession. They actually put up on their website all these diploma mill schools that are on the take. So that was nice for us. We got them all handed to us. This is just one, you know, person. I mean, there's many more people trying to make this an industry. So the education fraud, not just the exam fraud, but the education fraud, why is it a problem? I mean, Arizona has, you know, unwittingly inherited this problem with having to now accept people who are qualified or authorized to practice in other states can now practice here. The problem with that is I can give two instant examples. California, right next door, they are not regulated by a typical government agency like the rest of the United States. They have a nonprofit board. And they, in their wisdom, decided to, for a period of time anyway, to not use the MBLEX. So there's no kind of safety net going on in California. And then they show up here and are apparently allowed to practice. Other side of the country, moved to Indiana. Indiana, the massage board, knows they have fraudulent diploma mills in their state, but the massage board is not authorized to do anything about that. The Department of Education that oversees that, they have a law that the only people who can make a complaint about a school, and I use that term school loosely, are the students, like if you actually go there. Well, if they're a diploma mill, like, they're the people who just paid $10,000 to get the fake diploma. They're not going to report, you know, knock out the scheme that they're involved in. So they can come into Arizona and have this, you know, transcript that they supposedly went to school with. So the system would be good if everybody was pure and qualified, but, you know, the staff here have inherited this, like, massive national problem, and by consequence, so has the board. So, you know, we're here to support you in any way we can. Here's another, you know, brag page. This is like what they use to say, oh, we can get you to be a massage therapist. And so the people are sitting in China going, oh, that's, I think I'll move to Florida. That has a nice beach. I mean, they're using kind of tourist things to lure the people here. Where do you want to live in America? Consequences for states, obviously. I mean, these people come to the actual state boards and take their pictures and then go out and brag to their potential customers about being able to get them a license. Excuse me. I appear in that Nevada one at the bottom. This went out on a Facebook page in real time before I even got back home to the office. Obviously, consequences for the public, the unwitting public, who have the right to seek a legitimate therapeutic massage, and these people are just bringing a bad reputation to the profession. So we agree with AMTA. We don't want this involved in legitimate massage, but we can't just go like this. It's happening. They're infiltrating. They're coming to test centers every day. And it's not just in Arizona. It's a scheme across the country. And kudos to the massage board. We are not about over-regulation. In fact, the FSMTB mandate is to simplify and standardize regulation, to take away burdens from legitimate therapists. But we are about smart regulation. So, you know, we can't confuse human trafficking with other kinds of illicit, we call them the SOBs, sexually oriented businesses, or just plain old prostitution. I never thought I'd have to just say that, as if that's just a thing on the side now. But so up in the left-hand corner, this is again at a test center. This is real life. These are not Googled images to make shock value here today. This is a candidate coming in, couldn't speak English. She has her handler with her. Because as Tom said, they take away the girl's passports. They're not going to say, oh, here's all your ID, go and take a test. They come and keep control of all their possessions. They lure them in and show the nice accommodations they can get. Down in the bottom right, this is a still shot, but we actually have the video recording. This is at a test center where we caught one of the candidates violating policy, and she's actually down on her knees begging to the test center lady because when her handler came, who knows what was going to happen. So it's hard to watch, so I just sent the picture instead of the video. But so some of the things that the Federation does, you know, we it's best not to do it on the back end. We'd rather prevent it on the front end, but we do invalidate results. This is from last year. We have a school coming up this month before the board where we'll probably, the board will invalidate about another 280 results. So what that does is it helps if those people then come to Arizona, you then have the legal authority to deny the licensure application because they have no exam score. So that's why the exam is a very good safety net for public protection, not only for safe and competent practice, but also for having one of the components of the licensure requirements. So we do work very closely, not only with the state board staff and the state boards, but also with the testing center, Pearson View, the high security test centers. That does come at a price, but it's a price we're willing to pay in order to try and keep the legitimate massage therapy profession, I don't know about pure, but free as much as we can of these imposters. We work with local, that's Tennessee Bureau of Investigation. We do educational workshops with law enforcement, and then collaborate with the Department of Justice, mostly the FBI. Since these people are moved around the country and we have the information of everybody trying to seek access to the profession. In extreme cases, we do initiate litigation. This is enormously expensive, but an important undertaking for us to protect the integrity of the exam. Somebody who passes the exam legitimately can wear that as a badge of pride. I mean, it's a profession that they're entering. And so we do what we can to the extent that the law allows to protect the legitimate therapists by going after these illegitimate, either diploma mills or individuals. But you can see that this is an example. This is from a few years ago, but it really illustrates. So this is a school that was a known, you know, doing fraudulent activity. We filed litigation, a lawsuit against them, and then their candidate volume went really way down. It turns out at the same time they applied under another name a few miles down the road and the state gave them a license to open a school. You have, I don't know, on the recording you can't see me, I use that word school lightly. And then after the litigation was ended, then they're back in business. So it's kind of like, you know, whack-a-mole. Some days we feel like we're drinking from a fire hydrant. But I will say we value enormously the relationship that we have with the staff. It's not getting less. We wish it didn't exist in the massage profession. But the fact is that's our reality. So kudos to the staff in Arizona and the board members. We appreciate what you do. You can't be thanked enough, but you'll be thanked every time we come here and from afar. So I think that was... I'd be happy to entertain any questions, or all three of us can, or if you wish us to...
Madam Chair and board members, although the agenda is posted for board discussion, it's the will of the chair that we'd not get into questions today from the board because this was just a presentation, initial presentation.
Understood.
But we certainly want to thank you. I just want to give you a smile as you walk away from the table. While we've been sitting here, we've had, as we often do, we get email questions from would-be licensees. And I won't comment it. I'll just read it to you. So it's to the board. If my mother's language is not English, how many points do I need for the TOEIC? And we didn't get into a lot of discussion about that today, but
right.
English proficiency exam and the fact that the scores come in uniformly often.
Yes.
Another aspect of your brief. So.
But I know even the TOEFL, I think last year, was breached as well, the people that give the TOEFL. So, yeah, it's definitely, you know, organized crime, but we appreciate the value of regulation and most especially massage regulation. It's a different kind of profession and things that you have to deal with. Thank you.
Okay, so let's give a nice round of applause. Thank you, Tom. Thank you. It's perhaps not the most enjoyable thing to look at, but it's so very important in our industry. It is 10:06, so we're going to take a 10-minute break and let the room get back straightened around. So we will resume. It's now at 10. Well, let's make it 10:15. Or if you're in a conversation, step out to the hall. Okay, we're going to resume, and we will be on item 7, item for board review, discussion, and possible action upon a vote of the majority of a quorum. The board may go into executive session pursuant to ARS 38-431.03A2 to discuss or consider records exempt by law from public inspection, including the receipt and discussion of information or testimony that is specifically required to be maintained as confidential by state or federal law. Okay, item A, formal hearings. We do not have a formal hearing today. Item B, formal interview. Case number 20-121, Joseph Salgado. Are you present? Please come forward. Thank you.
It's actually Joshua. Joshua.
Excuse me?
It's Joshua, not Joseph.
Oh.
I know it says Joseph on there.
Thank you for the correction.
In the investigative report, it says Joshua.
Okay. Okay. My papers together. Change the tabs. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which tab is formal interview? Thank you. Okay. It is now 10:20 on January 31st, 2020. This is a formal interview regarding Joshua Salgado, license number MT 23633. Thank you for coming forward. Did you bring an attorney?
No.
Okay. Please state your name.
Joshua Salgado.
Okay, my name is Victoria Bowman. I'm the chairman of the board and professional board member. The other board members will now introduce themselves and indicate whether they are a consumer or professional board member.
Nick McLean, public member.
Emily Clark, professional member.
John Ortega, public member.
Kevin Ramsey, professional member.
You have received a letter informing you of the matters to be discussed today, the process for the formal interview, and the possible actions the board may take. The purpose of this formal interview is to inquire into the facts and circumstances of the case and decide the outcome. We will hear a brief summary of the case and then interview you. If you have any questions for the board or anyone giving information during the interview, you may ask them through me. This proceeding is being recorded to provide a record to the court reporter. Would you please swear the licensee in?
Could you please raise your right hand? Do you solemnly swear that the testimony you are about to give in today's proceedings will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you.
Will you please give us a summary of the case?
Yes. Madam Chair, members of the board, on September 16th, 2019, the board received a complaint from AS, who presented to Desert Healing Massage Spa on September 10th. Respondent greeted AS and began the therapy session with a deep tissue massage that AS alleged caused her injuries. AS provided photos of several deep bruises on her body. She stated that respondent performed cupping using what appeared to be dirty cups that also caused her great pain. According to AS, respondent placed a blindfold over her eyes, which she stated made her feel scared, uncomfortable, uneasy, afraid, and wanted to flee the room. Respondent lowered the draping further than usual and began massaging AS's pectoral muscles, at which time respondent's hands went under the draping and he began rubbing her breast. AS stated that she kept praying and wanted to scream, and that while still blindfolded, respondent began making sexual noises such as grunting, groaning, and moaning while rubbing her pectoral muscles. AS stated that she could hear respondent saying yes a number of times in an appropriate sexual manner and that he slouched over the table and laid his head on the bed. After respondent regrouped, he moved AS's arms around, which appeared to cause her breasts to move in circles. After respondent pulled the draping back up, he exited the room. AS stated that she got dressed as soon as she could and that she could not believe she paid for a sexual assault. In addition to her complaint to this board, she also filed a report with the Phoenix Police Department.
Thank you. Mr. White, first of all, is AS in the room, or is she available on telephonically?
No, she's here.
She's here? Okay, thank you. We'll swear her in when she comes up for testimony. Okay, thank you. Do you wish to make a statement or be available to answer questions?
Do both, if that's okay.
We now can ask questions. Would any board member like to begin asking questions?
John Ortega. Why would she say you were making inappropriate noises? What exactly was going on?
I don't know why she would say that. I mean, I'm throughout the whole session, usually I'm quiet unless I have to educate somebody on what I'm doing. This being her third visit, I mean, it was a very quiet session.
So this was the third time you had a...
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
I notice on the write-up that, and I remember from our first discussion, that AS complained or commented that there was loud music coming from another facility near yours. So if you were making noises, would this have been difficult for her to actually hear because of the other music?
It's not a different facility. My practice is located inside of a gym where there's loud music playing all the time.
Okay.
So, I mean, I don't know if that's what she was hearing was the music or what she was doing. But, I mean, I get a lot of people complaining about the music in general being loud. Me being more of a sports massage therapist, that's the environment I put myself in. So I don't know what that would be the cause of, if she could hear it or what the cause was.
Kevin Ramsey, this being the third appointment that she had with you, does the work that you provided in this third session, does that line up with the prior two? Is there any different maybe techniques or applications that you used in this one?
The only difference was that day she came in, and I recall she said she had anterior hip pain, so I worked on her quad that day, and then she had a headache, which I proceeded to work on the pectoral muscles above the draping and the neck.
The processes that you use to clean your cups, would you describe that, please?
I clean the cups with barbicide wipes in between each session, and at the end of the day, I do hot soap and water and clean them and let them sit and then clean them that way. The other thing I want to point out is I don't know how she would know if the cups were dirty if my cups are not visible for anyone when they come in. They're in a bag. I get them out as when I need to use them. And I used them on her back, so she had no ability whatsoever to see the cups or what the condition of the cups were at all.
Was that modality used all three times?
I use it as needed. It's something that I offer, the cupping with everything incorporated, the massage, stretching.
So had she used it the previous two times?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And one question about some of these intake forms. It looks like the first session intake form, she stated that she did not take any medication. The second one, I think it says she was taking a medication that can be used for certain medical conditions. Do you have, did she give you recognition about any medical conditions?
She didn't give me, on the intake form itself, it did. I don't know if I gave you guys that, but I have that intake form here. I don't know if you guys want to see that or not.
We do have copies of the certain intake forms.
No, but she didn't. Otherwise, what was stated on the intake form, she didn't say anything.
Okay.
Else.
Nothing that would cause you to maybe change the type of techniques that you might be using,
no,
or something like that.
John Ortega, why did you put a blindfold on her?
I don't know why she would describe it as a blindfold, because my... Like I said, my practice is inside of a gym. It's not a typical spa where there's a dim light or anything. It's fluorescent lights like we see up here. When I flip you over, because you've been on your face so long, I ask them, do you want me to put a cover over your head, over your face, over your eyes? And that cover is just the pillowcase that was on the headrest, folded up, placed over their eyes, not tied at all whatsoever.
Thank you.
Can you describe the technique during her input that would she might feel as though you were purposefully trying to move her breast tissue or?
No, I don't really recall what she would say. I mean, like I said, I do the massage above the draping, so anything that's visible from the draping, and then I do add range of motion, getting her out into there, getting into the pec a little bit more, but that's about it. It's not like a constant motion that would cause a lot of movement whatsoever in that aspect.
When you say above the drape, you mean superior to the drape?
Superior.
Or
yeah,
working
superior.
Over the drape? Okay.
No, yeah, superior.
And I also have a question about... one of the disciplinary actions on here is practicing as a licensee under this chapter without an active license. I saw that you went to school in 2010 when you graduated. Is that
yes.
Right? And then when was your initial application date?
I don't recall. I mean, it was shortly after I graduated.
Okay. Have you worked in your own business since then, or?
No, I just started my business last February.
Mr. Sohan,
Delgado, Emily Clark. What do you do with your lotion bottle? Do you have it in a holster next to you? Do you put it on the side, or what?
It's off to the side.
Okay. You don't normally have a holster and keep it close to you? Okay.
Given given her allegations being pretty detailed about certain specific points, what possible perception might be, I mean, she was very detailed even to the point where, you know, she says that you put your head on the table, you know, you were being verbal throughout the session, you know, is there anything that could, from your point of view, be, you know, a possible answer to those allegations, or is it just...
I can't think of anything that I would have done or something for her to say something like that. Like, I don't conduct myself in that manner since graduating. I mean, haven't had a single complaint whatsoever. And I mean, nothing to this extent. And I don't conduct myself in that way. So I don't know why she would say something like that or what would cause her to feel like that was what was going on. I mean,
We do have AS here. Would anyone on the board like to ask some questions?
Sure.
Would you please step back? AS, will you come forward, please? Thank you. Mrs. Harris, will you swear AS in?
Yes, ma'am. Could you please raise your right hand? Do you solemnly swear the testimony you will give today in today's proceedings will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Would you like to make an initial statement?
I don't know if you want me to just answer questions.
Okay, well... We'll just go to questions at this point, and you can elaborate as you feel comfortable. Okay, we do have the information. We have read through it. Okay, who would like to begin? Kevin, would you like to begin with questions?
Sure. I mean, you provided a pretty detailed report here for us to kind of go through. You know, just maybe describe your experience. How did you find Mr. Salgado? What was your first two sessions like, and how is this third one different? And what really prompted you to submit this?
I found him on Groupon, so I went for my first session, and everything was good because I signed up for a reoccurring membership to go monthly. It was supposed to be like a 60-minute massage with a 30-minute stretch. So I had two sessions after that. My second session with him was primarily just to focus on my legs because I was having like quad and knee pain. So then on my third session, which was this one that I, in September, when I came in, I said, my knees are better, but I'm having just neck and shoulder pain. So I just want to focus on like my right side, my neck, and my shoulder. So, like, my knees are good, my legs are good. So when he was focusing, when he did, like, my quads and my legs, and when he was, like, digging into my legs again, and I was laying there just, like, clenched up and was like, oh, my God, ow, oh my God. And I kept having to say that, and he wasn't moving, wasn't, like, relieving the pressure. I was, like, fisting my my hands, and there was no change in anything. He didn't say, like, oh, is this too much? Oh, let me, like, back off. I mean, I didn't even know why he was doing my legs, but when there was no change there, kept going. There was no stretch in that massage either. And it was just, and that third one was like very odd, but when it was a complete different, it was a complete change from the first, my first experience. My second experience was a little bit, it was a little questionable because I did get cupping on my quads and I was severely bruised from the cupping, and I've had cupping done from other places, like get cupping done frequently from my acupuncturist, and I've never bruised before. I realized with cupping you have marks, but to have bruising was odd, to have the bruising that I did have from the cups. But then with my third time that I saw him, to have the bruising I did from his hands that lasted for over 10 days. I don't bruise easily. So it was too much. I get massages all the time. I probably get massaged several times a month from different massage therapists, and I've never had an experience like that before. So when I've had therapists ask me if I've asked if I want my neck and shoulders done, do you want to focus on just the neck and shoulders, is usually a question I get, or do you want a full body? But this time it was just like, do what I want. And then when with the whole blindfold thing, no, he didn't tie me up with a blindfold around my head, but he never asked, do you want me to place this over your eyes? Would you prefer to have this placed on your eyes because the lights are bright? And I've never had a massage therapist get on top of the table with me and put their body on the table over my body. So he did that when I was laying on my back. He did that when I was laying face down. So to, I mean, have his body parts laying on top of yours while he's massaging you with just one cheek is uncomfortable.
When you say that you were laying prone in supine and his body was on top of yours, in what manner or how was he then still able to conduct the massage?
At some points, he might have one foot down on the ground. Other parts, he had both of his legs up on the table, like both of his knees up on the table.
But so you're saying, though, that his chest was on your back or on your
right.
chest?
Right.
So then exactly. What was he massaging on you at that time? I'm trying to picture the leverage that he would have
had. If I was laying on my stomach, he would have... I think there were times where he would have, like, he would be sitting on the side where his maybe feet were dangling, and then his whole body would be, like, over the top of my back.
So over it but not on it. I'm trying to clarify.
That over the top of, yeah, but then if he was doing my legs, he would be completely over the top of my legs.
Thank you.
I would like some clarification on that. Where were his knees on the table in relation to you?
When he would do like my legs, his knees, I know, were like on the table.
Both so knees on the table?
Mm-hmm.
By your feet, by your knees, by your hips?
By my knees, I think, yeah. He put his body on top of the table, like almost the entire massage.
Thank you.
In your past experiences, you say on here that you've had many massages before. How many were this type of like a deep tissue massage that you've had in the past or a sports massage?
Every time.
You've never bruised before?
No.
Can I ask about the medication that's on your intake form? And I was actually incorrect before. In July and August, you wrote that you do take a medication. Mm-hmm. In the September intake form, it's no medication is listed. Was there a change? Did you come off of medication? Anything like that?
No. I don't recall doing a new intake form in September.
Okay. Do you still take that same medication?
Yeah.
Do you have any medical conditions that...
Yeah, I have lupus.
Okay.
So that's something I always disclose, and that's something I told him at my first visit. Like, hey, I have lupus. My body is... My main thing is I get stiff. Mm-hmm. So I'm sensitive around my joints. Like, if you get, like, right inside of my joints, that's painful, but my main thing is just stiffness. But I don't think I filled out a different form in September.
It may just be the update to the SOAP notes.
Okay.
And so you've received deep tissue massage, would you say, more regularly than other forms of massage?
Uh-huh.
And you've never had the sort of reaction to where it is painful or too much pressure or anything like that?
No.
With your lupus, do you have anemia associated with that?
No.
And what about the cups? How do you know that they were dirty?
So he keeps the cups out. He's got these little cubbies right when you walk in the front door, or his little door to his massage area. So he's got little cubbies where he keeps, like, his lotion, and they're just kept right on the top shelf. So you can see them there. So he doesn't keep them in a bag. He keeps them right there on the top. So I saw them just left out, kind of just thrown out from the a lady that he saw previous to me. And they were just sitting there, and then he used them on me.
Thank you.
A.S., how would you determine that they were dirty and maybe not know that maybe he did clean them between you and the last person? How would you know that?
That the client he saw prior to me came right out and I came right in. So it was like a back-to-back.
Are you sure that he used those cups on them?
There were no... He says that he uses them on everybody.
Maybe he didn't use them on them.
Well, I don't know then, but they're the only cups that he's ever used, the same cups. Okay.
And another question that I had is, you talked about that he was massaging your pecs, okay? How far... Can you show us how far down he pulled the sheet?
The sheet was about here, and I still had the blindfold on my eyes at that time, too. The sheet kept getting lower and lower. And I understand pecs are here. And usually when I get massage with pecs, you get massaged this way. He's massaging this way. And it was very light and kept going down further and further, kept folding the sheet down further and pulling it down further. And then at one point he had one hand. And then would move back like this on the chair, and then start moaning and grunting and just saying, yes, oh, yes.
And you could see that with your blindfold on?
I could feel it and I could hear it.
Thank you.
And it lasted a long time.
Why not just get up? I mean, you're experienced with massages. If you felt this was inappropriate, why not just end the session?
I felt like that's something that I kind of battled with, because I felt uncomfortable. Like, I'm laying there naked under one sheet. There's a gym right outside. You can hear people coming in and out, working out. Like, what do I do? Just jump off the table, like, run out in this gym?
Why not ask him to stop the session and leave the room so you can get dressed?
I wish I did that going back now, but that's why I took the opportunity to report it to the right people.
Has there been an outcome to that investigation yet?
The investigation is closed.
And what was the disposition?
No action taken. One-on-one complaint, which is another They never prosecute on the first complaint. Not in Arizona.
Any other questions for AS?
I don't have any.
Thank you. You may step back.
Thank you.
Can we bring Josh back up? Josh, Nick McLean, explain the process that she's alleging as far as how you use your table supporting your weight.
Just like a regular massage. I don't get up on the table.
Don't tell me a regular massage, because we've all have different experiences with massages. I've never had anybody put their weight on a table.
Or yeah, I mean,
my body. No. So I'm asking you, based on what she's saying, explain how you would use that massage. Are your knees up on there? Is your forearms up on there? Is your body over hers?
The only thing up on there is elbows, forearms. That's it. Everything else on the table, yeah. I'm just either standing beside it, either forearms like this, or forearm to the side. Pretty much it. I don't get up on the table whatsoever.
Do you ever have an opportunity to use some leverage to possibly put one knee up on the table, one foot on the floor?
No, because I have my table low enough to give me all the leverage I need.
Okay. Did you, getting back to the cupping issue here, did you use the cupping, the cups on all of your clients, or did you may have used the cupping on your previous client before AS?
I don't use cups on all my clients. I don't recall the client before her if I did or not. But like I said earlier, my cups are in a little bag.
Take them out.
I take them out of the bag. Yeah.
You're going to be using them?
No. I only take them out when I use them.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if you knew you were going to be using them on AS, you would have maybe taken them out in preparation?
Yeah.
What style of cups are they?
They're just regular silicone vacuum cups.
Not the pump.
Oh, with the pump? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She says you were working on her legs for this third session, and that she may have verbally said, "That's too much, ow." Now, did she ever speak out in a session to make you maybe more lighten the pressure, maybe changing your technique at all?
No, she never said anything. And it was just one leg. It was that anterior leg that I notated on the soap note.
And can you describe the techniques that you used to work on her pectoral muscles?
The pectoral muscles? Just myofascial release, fingertips, fists.
Can you explain for general public what myofascial release techniques?
It's a slow technique. Usually just no lotion is how I start off most of my massages. It's a no lotion right on the pecs, moving breast tissue and tissue down. And very slow. Like I said, just fingertips or a fist is what I use.
Since you don't wear a holster for your lotion, where is it kept? Would there be a time where you'd be leaning over your client to be able to get any lotions or oils?
When I do the neck, it's usually right underneath the table. So right there by my chair on the side.
Mr. Salgado, can you describe how you would drape someone if you're going to be working on the pec muscles?
I just fold the sheet down enough to expose the breast, the clavicle, the clavicle area, and that's pretty much what I do. The draping doesn't.
How do you secure the drape?
Secure the drape over the arms.
Over the arms?
Yeah. So Your
arms are underneath the sheet?
No, no, no. The arms are above the sheet. That's how the drape gets secured down.
John Ortega, and you had written permission to work her pecs?
I mean, that's not something that you usually get permission to work on the pecs. I mean, so I...
Why not?
I don't know, I mean, I've never had to ask for permission to work on the pecs. I mean, it's just the pectoral area. I mean, if you sign my intake form, you're giving consent to what I'm doing, so...
You give explanation before the session about where you're going to be working, what style of techniques you're going to be working, you know, give the opportunity for the client to say yes, no to any of these. You know, generalized consent has come a long way, even in just 10 years. Almost every single clinic that I've been to, school, professional, they have these areas listed out. Typically, it's things like pecs, abdominals, glutes. Those are signified consent area.
Yeah.
So do you go through, at least verbally, we're going to be doing this work here, we're going to be doing these techniques here? That strong communication is...
No, I do. I mean, every time we go into something, especially if it's something new that I'm not usually doing, I explain what I'm going to be doing. In that case, she came in with a headache, neck pain, so I told her we're going to focus on the pectoralis muscle and the neck area. But on the intake form also, it asks if there's an area that you don't want me to touch whatsoever.
Okay.
So there's that area or that aspect of somebody being able to tell me. I mean, people put in there that they don't want their glutes touched. I don't touch their glutes whatsoever.
Did you do any stretching with her, with AS?
Just the range of motion on her arm to kind of open up the pectoralis area to be able to get in a little bit deeper in there.
Have you researched lupus to find out what some of the symptoms are of lupus and what might be recommended to do or not to do with someone who has lupus?
Not really. I did kind of research it after the fact that I saw it on there, but I didn't really see anything that kind of stood out to do differently. Than most things. I mean, it's almost on the same kind of border of fibromyalgia, and it varies from person to person. I didn't see anything that really stood out to me to be able to change something different. Unless I usually just go off of, I have a lot of clients that do have fibromyalgia. One client is different. Another client has totally different ways of perceiving the massage. So unless you tell me otherwise, there's no change really. If I don't have to accommodate anything or any kind of pain or anything like that.
So did you discuss the lupus with your client because anxiety is a side effect of lupus for some people? Anxiety is a side effect of the medication she's taking as well. And then you're blindfolding somebody, you're going through the modalities, which could create an increased feeling of anxiety. She came in with a headache that day as well.
Executive session. The
area
like
that you're working within. All of these could have played into an effect of how she interpreted the massage.
Yeah.
So don't you, or do you believe it's beneficial to know how your patient is affected by their lupus or fibromyalgia or whatever they may be going
through? I mean, it's good to know, but I mean, it's also good to notate that this was her third visit and nothing has ever been an issue before. It's in the same environment. So why the third visit? Why not the first visit?
Because she may have been battling it that day and not the other two.
I would, thank you, Ms. McClain. I would like to make a motion for the board to go into executive session.
Kevin Ramsey, I'll second.
For legal advice?
For legal advice, yes. We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? It is so moved. We will excuse ourselves for a few minutes.
Well, A.S. had mentioned that she felt as if you were hovering over her on the table, and that you were on top of the table. Okay. You mentioned that your table was lower than normal. Do you have a hydraulic table, or do you do it manually?
It's just a manual table.
Okay. And is that to be able to facilitate doing deep tissue massage, making the table lower, which is normally typical?
I mean, it's not low. It's like typically somebody my size would have it at a specific notch on the table. I do just one lower, just because that's my preference on my table, is just to be lower. It's less taxing on my body.
Okay.
Just with my mechanics and what I do in my practice.
Okay. Thank you.
How long do you keep the cups in place?
5 to 10 minutes.
And then do you do movement with the cups, or do you keep them stationary?
I do some gliding and then some stationary. So it just depends on the area and the tissue.
Thank you.
One last question for me. Are you aware that there are certain medical conditions where deep tissue would not be recommended?
I mean, I'm aware of some medical conditions that you don't want to do deep tissue, yeah.
Okay.
And in the previous sessions with AS, she requested deep tissue?
Yes.
And in this instance, she also requested deep tissue?
Yes.
When do you complete your soap notes?
At the end of the day.
And how many other treatments did you do on this day?
That day in particular, I did three or four.
Three or four total, or three or four after?
No, three or four total. She was my last one.
She was your last one?
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you. Are there any other questions?
No more questions for me.
The board will now deliberate. After a formal interview, the board may take any of the following actions. A, dismiss if the complaint is without merit. B, take any of the following actions. 1, issue a non-disciplinary advisory letter. 2, issue a non-disciplinary action requiring the licensee to complete a prescribed number of continuing education hours in the areas prescribed by the board. 3, issue a letter of reprimand which must state the factual basis for the reprimand and statute and rule where that were violated. 4, issue a degree of censure which includes findings of fact and conclusion of law. 5, impose probation which may include suspension not to exceed 12 months or restriction of the license includes findings of fact and conclusions of law. 6, enter into an agreement to restrict or limit the licensee's practice to retrain, rehabilitate, or assess the licensee, protect the public, ensure licensee's ability to safely practice. 7, order restitution to include an order to repay fees paid by a massage therapy client and for the cost of the investigation. 8, impose a civil penalty of at least $1,000 but not more than $10,000. Or C, refer to formal hearing for revocation or suspension of the license. Okay, any discussion?
Well, while there is, you know, quite a bit of difference in the two sides, you know, it makes it hard to discern what actually happened. I do think there's a certain lack of communication, though. I mean, over the course of my career, I've seen many training opportunities, many education opportunities where kind of going over the top in your communication is necessary to really be descriptive about what it is that you want to provide, you know, how, really laying out the groundwork for how those session is going to, you know, play out, from areas worked to grabbing consent to, you know, using these extra tools, you know, cupping and things like that, and really, really ensuring that the client has full control. Most of the time, a client or a patient is going to feel a power differential in our session, and so, you know, that can be gripping kind of emotionally for them. And so, you know, being communicative, I find, is one of the most important parts about being a massage therapist, you know, even in some cases more so than your technical application, I suppose you could say. So communication is a huge breakdown here from, you know, what happened to what both people are saying. So it makes it hard to discern, you know, the truth out of two ends of the argument. I don't think that there was any intent for wrongdoing as when it comes to the application of technique, but I definitely think there could be room for, you know, improvement on that.
John Ortega, yes. I think the impetus is on the therapist to put the client at ease. And it's also the impetus on the therapist to specify which parts of the bodies want to be. I mean, in his testimony, he leaves it up to the client to tell him which parts, and which is sometimes okay. But like for someone like me who's never had a massage, I mean, it would just be, I'm too ticklish. I don't get massages. In her original complaint, she never mentions the knees being on the table. She never mentions a body being draped on hers. I think to go back to his point, there's a lot of miscommunication going on, and it's always imperative on the therapist to put the client at ease, and I don't know that that happened in this case. That's the way I'm seeing it.
I believe there is a lack of communication, I believe, on both sides. The therapist, yes, has to put the client at ease and should be aware of certain muscles tension that might be available, that might present itself, to indicate that maybe the client is not comfortable with something, and then ask, are you uncomfortable with something or whatever. It's also very typical for deep tissue massage to lower the table sufficiently so you can get the right amount of pressure to do deep tissue. Certain medical conditions are not conducive to deep tissue. A lighter massage or a different type of massage might be more called for. I think every massage therapist should have the massage therapist guide to pathology, which includes things that certain medical conditions have and what kinds of massage are necessary. It's an excellent book, and it should be in every massage therapist toolbox. That way, if there is something that might present itself within a client session, the massage therapist can go to it and look and see and research and find out what they would recommend to the client. But I do believe that there was a lot of miscommunication on both parts, and certain perceptions that may have come up that may not have actually happened, but the perception is still real on the client's part. So, that's my thoughts.
Okay. I pretty much echo what everybody else is already saying as far as the communication goes. You know, before, during the massages takes place, I know some therapists will ask throughout, you know, was this feeling good, more pressure, less pressure. It also seems, based on medical condition, based on AS not feeling completely well that day, and the environment of where the massage takes place is really not conducive to being relaxing in the first place, which could increase a person's anxiety that doesn't have any kind of problems. The second kind of a minor issue, and I'm sure it's just with practice with what you folks do, would be with the draping and explaining to somebody you know, how they're going to be covered or uncovered, to include, I don't care if you've seen her 10 times, each time you go back over the blindfold, you know, quote unquote, and the draping procedures and what's going to take place with that client. And don't assume that because they've seen a therapist before that they automatically know how you're going to operate with what you're doing.
And I'm in agreement. I think there was miscommunication on
both parts. AS has had a lot of massages, and so irrespective of a medical condition, you know, she has apparently known that she can do those and have those. And I would also, I'm with you on, you know, it's nice to go to a gym, but I don't know if that's the place I would want to have a massage, unless it would be have a little bit of quietness to it. I can also understand, I'm going to call it an eye cover, because when a person is having neck pain and perhaps headaches, it's really nice to have that so that there is no light coming in. And I just as a side note with migraines, it's like they need a dark room. Not implying that that was here, but that's, you know, part of it. And I found, you know, I found discrepancies on both sides. And again, I'm in agreement with the rest of the group. There was just simply poor communication. Okay, do we wish to make a motion as to what we would like to do? I'm going to say that, in my opinion, I'm rather in favor of point two, to issue a non-disciplinary action requiring the licensee to complete a prescribed number of continuing education hours. And I think business practices with communication would be the area that I think is important.
I have a point. As staff, to order the therapist to give the money back, does that make it disciplinary?
Yes.
Thank you.
I believe that based on the emails, you can confirm. You dropped her 30-day requirement.
Yeah.
For pay anyway.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I would second your motion as far as it being a non-disciplinary action requiring classes.
Okay. Before you second that, how about if we decide how many hours and get all those things in place and then a second? Okay. So 8 hours?
For business practices?
Business practices with communication.
I think it's a pretty strong point of all this, yeah. 8 hours.
In class?
Live in person.
Board approved.
Board approved.
Staff approved.
And that covers draping procedures and whatnot as well?
Yeah.
In addition to his regular...
In addition to his regular 24 hours per two-year renewal? Right? Time period to complete these.
Investigator White, this is one time. So the class is to pick up again March.
Okay. So shall we give 6 months then to complete these hours?
I think that's appropriate.
Okay. So the motion is a non-disciplinary action requiring 8 hours of continuing education in addition to his regular hours in communication and business practices to be pre-approved by board staff and completed within 6 months.
And this is just, and part of your motion is to address the miscommunication on the part of the licensee?
Correct.
Okay.
Now I second it, that we would have the...
this does not have to be a roll call vote, correct?
It doesn't, but you could do a roll call vote at your discretion.
Mr. McLean?
Aye.
Emily Clark, aye.
John Ortega, yes.
Kevin Ramsey, aye.
Victoria Bowman, aye. The motion passes. You'll be in touch with board staff and get that taken care of. Thank you so much for attending today.
Thank you.
Okay. Number 7C, orders for board approval, 20-115, Shu Ling Lee.
Do both of them at the same time.
Okay.
Have they already been written? They already for the board already. This is just approval by the board that these actions are going to be taken. So you can do both actions at the same time.
So, Madam Chair, so this is just for the board to, at your discretion, it would be a motion to approve the proposed orders in case number 20-115 and 20-116. As the findings of facts, conclusions of law, and the order reflects the board's decision that it made. So this is your approval of the proposed order at your discretion.
Okay. Thank you.
You just need a motion.
Yes, it would just be a motion to approve if that's the board's desire.
Okay. Clark, I make a motion that we approve the board orders for case number 20-115, Shu Ling Lee, and case number 20-116 for Royden Jones.
Victoria Bowman, I'll second it. All in roll call.
Aye. Nick McLean, aye.
Emily Clark, aye.
And John Ortega, no.
Mr. Ramsey?
Kevin Ramsey, no.
Victoria Bowman, aye. The motion passes. Okay. Point D, investigative review, board to review, discuss, and take possible action on investigative files. Ms. Khan, do we take these one at a time? Or
yes, you would want to take them one at a time. Okay. So starting with D1.
Right, 20-130, Lemon Yang.
Thanks, sir.
Madam Chair, members of the board, on November 20th, 2019, the board was notified by the Attorney General's office that a respondent was arrested on August 20th, 2018 for prostitution, conspiracy, illegal control of an enterprise, money laundering, and keeping or residing in a house of prostitution. On November 7th, 2019, respondent pled guilty to two counts of securing proceeds of an offense. Both are Class 6 designated felonies, and the remaining three charges were dismissed. The respondent failed to notify the board of the arrest and conviction within 10 days of each occurrence, pursuant to ARS 32-3208. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. So we have a consent agreement.
Yes, you have a proposed consent agreement for voluntary surrender.
Right.
And that's for board, you know, it's for you all to review and to either accept or reject the proposed consent agreement for voluntary surrender.
Okay. The voluntary surrender, how long does that preclude an individual from reapplying? Is it 2 years?
5 years.
Five? Okay.
5 years, they can reapply, but the board doesn't have to accept the new application. They come before the board first, and they'll review it. If they don't agree with the, if they don't like the crime that the person did, they can always reject it.
Thank you, Mr. White.
And there also is stated reasons as to why it was surrendered.
And it has to be in writing. It would be in writing to you from that individual, and you would get a briefing of the past package when they come before you again, so you'll be able to review it again.
It would not be a motion to deem. It would just be at the board's discretion. It would just be a motion to approve the proposed consent agreement for voluntary surrender in the case number 20-130, Lee Yang, if that's the board's discretion, a desire.
Is there any discussion?
John Ortega, I propose we accept the consent for agreement for voluntary surrender for case 20-130. In the matter of Lin Mi Yang.
I second it. Victoria Bowman, roll call.
Yes, Andrea, can you call the roll call?
Right.
Chairwoman Bowman?
Aye.
Vice Chairwoman Clark?
Aye.
Mr. Ramsey?
Aye.
Mr. Ortega?
Yes.
And Mr. McLean?
Aye.
The motion passes.
Thank you. Okay, now let's take case 20-13, Zhang.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the board, on November 20th, 2019, the board was notified by the Attorney General's office that respondent was arrested on August 20th, 2018 for prostitution, conspiracy, illegal control of an enterprise, money laundering, and keeping or residing in a house of prostitution. On November 7, 2019, respondent pled guilty to 2 counts of securing the proceeds of an offense, and the remaining charges were dismissed. The respondent failed to notify the board of the arrest and conviction within 10 days of each occurrence pursuant to statute. Thank you.
So this is basically the same thing. I mean, they were involved in the same sort of investigation.
We need to take them one at a time. Is there a motion to accept this consent agreement?
Emily Clark, I make a motion that we accept this consent agreement for voluntary surrender in the case of 20-131, Jing Zhang.
John Ortega, I second.
Okay. Mrs. Narrows.
Roll call vote for the acceptance of the consent agreement in case 20131. Chairwoman Bowman?
Yes.
Vice Chairwoman Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Ramsey?
Aye.
Mr. Ortega?
Yes.
And Mr. McLean?
Aye.
The motion passes.
Okay, case number 20-119, Tiffany Hahn.
Yes, you can come up there. No, it's not Tiffany Hahn.
Yes, Tiffany Hahn.
Sampson. Go to Sampson.
Did you want to do Sampson next, yes, Mr.
Oh, okay.
White?
Okay. Okay. Christopher Sampson, case number 20-137. D, number 5. Sure, thank you.
Madam Chair and members of the board, on December 6, 2019, the board received a complaint from MM
who stated that when she presented to Hand and Stone Massage and Anthem for a spa treatment, respondent made several violations towards her. MM stated that from the start, respondent was acting strange and that he was hyper and animated. MM stated that respondent was chatting and repeated, "Are you ready for this? And I'm going to hurt you bad in a good way." According to MM, during the massage, respondent did not cover her completely with the sheet or tuck the draping the way other therapists had before him. Respondent's hands were in the pelvic area near MM's vagina, and respondent was touching her buttocks. Respondent then allegedly leaned over and was breathing heavy while saying something inaudible. Respondent did it again and asked MM if he could pray with her. MM stated, "No, I'm good," and respondent became agitated and awkward, according to MM's complaint. MM stated that she was uncomfortable, afraid, uneasy, and looking for an escape, and that she asked respondent to be professional. While working on MM's hips and buttocks, respondent completely exposed her buttocks by pulling the sheet down. MM asked respondent if she was more tense on either side, and that respondent moved down closer to her while breathing heavy and stated that she was tight and that it made him horny. MM stated that she told respondent that they were done and that he had crossed the line. Respondent apologized and kept saying, "Please don't turn me into the board and I don't want to be that guy." MM left the location and notified management, and in addition to her complaint with this board, she also filed a report with the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office. Thank you.
So please identify yourself. You're MM?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Do you wish to make a comment?
Well, there's more I could say, but that's basically covers it.
So what is happening in this case is he has consented to voluntarily surrender his license, which will mean that for 5 years he will not be allowed to practice massage in the state of Arizona. And in 5 years, if he wishes to reapply, we would certainly look at the case to determine whether or not that would be returned, his license would be returned.
Actually, his license will be, as reported to the National Practitioner Data Bank, okay. He will not be able to practice in the United States.
In the right. United States.
Okay. United States.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay?
Yes.
Okay. Is there a motion?
Thank you for coming.
Can I get a second and walk around?
Sure. Right. I move that we accept this agreement. Do I need to, on case 20-137?
John Ortega, I second.
Mrs. Harris?
Roll call vote to accept the surrender in this case. Chairwoman Bowman?
Yes.
Vice Chairwoman Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Ramsey?
Aye.
Mr. Ortega?
Yes.
And Mr. McLean?
Aye.
The motion passes.
Thank you. Return to case 20-119, Tiffany Hahn. Thank you so much for coming. Okay. You know, Madam Chair, I'm not sure. You probably want to hear from Investigator White regarding Tiffany Hahn.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's walking the coin.
Okay. So, well. Okay, it's 11:35. We're going to take a five-minute break.
Genitals on May 1st, 2019, and was charged with prostitution, massage knowingly intending to arouse/gratify, and massage involving conducting therapy behind a locked door. On June 4th, 2019, the respondent was arraigned and scheduled for a pretrial hearing on October 15th. Respondent pled guilty to misdemeanor charge of massage therapy locked door on 12-12-2019. Respondent failed to notify the board of the arrest and conviction within 10 days of each occurrence pursuant to statute. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Matthew Leshevsky. I filed a notice of appearance for Ms. Zhang. I don't know if I know Ms. Kahn and Mr. White received it. I don't know if the board did.
It's been received.
Okay.
You're the attorney of record for this case. Okay. And this is Ms. Zhang and
Ms. Zhang and our interpreter.
Okay.
I would like to have his card for being an interpreter. Is he a court-approved interpreter?
Yes.
It's in my car.
Okay.
I will bring it back.
Take care of
the list. After it's done, I'm going to bring it back to here. Okay.
Thank you. If he could state his name for the record and spell his name for the record, please.
Jin Yin Lei, last name Lei, L-E-I. First name, Z-H-I-N-I-N-G.
Thank you.
My card is in the car. Okay. I'm sorry, I forgot about it.
Mrs. Naros, did you get that for the minutes? Okay, thank you. Okay. So this, Madam Chair, members of the board, this is an investigative review, and I believe Mrs. Naros has provided a brief overview. You're free to hear from the attorney and the licensee at your discretion. They're present to maybe provide context as to what occurred. Okay. Just for clarity, we are on item number D4, Shim and Zhang, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes, would you care to...
Good morning, Ms. Bowman and the board. My name is Matthew Leshefsky. I represent Ms. Zhang. I represented her in the City of Mesa Court case that brought this to you guys' attention. What we have now is she has pled guilty to a strict liability crime in the City of Mesa, working behind... It's not necessarily a locked door, but an unauthorized or non-sanctioned by the City of Mesa locked door. Strict liability offense, which means that it doesn't require intent, so you don't need to know you're doing it. So unfortunately, the building that she was working in, which is a sublet, almost like a salon suite, but for massage, the owner of the building didn't get the proper authorization from the City of Mesa. Unfortunately, the Mesa City Code doesn't allot for the owner to be the person that's found liable for the premises issue, but the person that's actually behind the locked door. The two other charges of prostitution and solicitation were dismissed, and they were dismissed because they weren't accurate and or in any realm of the world true. The person, the alleged, I don't know if you'd say victim or John in this matter, wasn't charged at the same time as Ms. Zhang. The City of Mesa police report, which I believe you have a copy of, states specifically that actions occurred that would be highly inappropriate and, in fact, illegal. Upon my investigation, I did a deposition of Mr. Nielsen, who was the alleged, again, victim or John, however you want to put it, who was a gentleman that was in town visiting from North Dakota. He had not received a massage from Ms. Zhang before, but there's random people coming in, and so he'd just been to the establishment before. When I spoke to him, I spoke to him with the City of Mesa prosecutor on the phone. Her name's Jennifer Valadez. And he said that the statements made in the police report were completely inaccurate. That at no point in time did Ms. Zhang ever make any solicitation to him, and at no point in time did she ever touch him inappropriately. I asked if, in his experience of receiving massages before, whether or not she conducted herself in a professional manner. He said, absolutely. I asked if he was ever uncovered in any inappropriate manner. He said, absolutely not. He said, I don't know where that's coming from. I never made those statements to the City of Mesa police officers that did their quote-unquote raid at that time. What I have found as I've been practicing, and I don't know if the board's aware, but I'm sure you are. Obviously, there's always two sides to every story. But what I have found is a lot of issues that stem out of this, and you'll see them when you're coming through here, is if you don't see both parties charged, there's issues. That should be a giant red flag for this board. And I hope that in future cases you'll notice that when you read the report and read and see what's happened. If the gentleman that's alleging or the woman that's alleging that they had something inappropriate happen and solicited it, they should be charged with a crime as well. And a lot of times they aren't because that never happened. And then they prey on people that don't speak fluent English and charge them with crimes that may or may not be accurate. So I just ask the board to take that into consideration in future cases. Today, Ms. Zhang understands that she was working behind an unauthorized door, albeit she didn't know that at the time. We would request that the board allow her to continue to work as she's done nothing inappropriate. And she would be open to voluntarily entering into some sort of continuing education classes so that she can make sure she's up to date with maybe some of the rules and regulations that she missed on this, which she takes full accountability for. With that, we'll leave it in the board's discretion, but we would ask at this time that no impact to her license take place, but if there is to be a punishment or recommendation, that it be continuing education classes at this time. Thank you.
Are there any questions from members of the board?
Yes. You stated that you spoke with we'll use the term John, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But he made a written statement to the police department.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
It appears he made a statement to the police department that this, in fact, did take place. So I'm kind of confused where the difference in the story comes in.
So am I, hence the interview. The statement to the police came in the police report. I interviewed him with the City of Mesa prosecutor. I have with me here today, if you guys would like, a copy of the deviation request that I sent in to the City of Mesa and Ms. Velez. And I state, you know, quite clearly, Mr. Nelson stated in the interview that was conducted by both myself and the city prosecutor that Ms. Zhang did not solicit any acts of prostitution and did not attempt to manipulate or touch him inappropriately. This is in direct contradiction to what was reported to you by the Mesa Police Department. I don't have any information as to why the police report says what it says. All I can tell you is that I personally spoke with Mr. Nelson on the phone with the City of Mesa prosecutor, and his statements and the statements that he would have made in court were that none of those things happened. And so, again, the irony of it is if he made those statements to the City of Mesa Police Department that he offered her money, he would have been charged with a crime.
What was she finally convicted of?
The strict liability offense under the Mesa Municipal Code for working behind an unauthorized locked door. And when I say that, the difference is when you commit a crime, most of them require you to have some sort of knowledge that you're doing it or an intent. The strict liability crime doesn't require that. So you could be doing something not knowingly that you're doing it illegally.
Member Ortega, how about if I give you my mic? Because your mic has just died.
And I believe what you were going to ask is whether or not it was a misdemeanor. And yes, sir, it is a misdemeanor offense.
Class one misdemeanor. Thank you.
Excuse me.
So our choices are to make to a formal interview or...
So I think what you have before you is a conviction for a locked door
And she had to pay a civil penalty. Is that also correct?
Yes. There was a $500 fine associated with that. I can tell you I was in there. Technically, you're on probation until the fine's paid. So she was on probation for about 8 minutes until she went downstairs and paid the fine. And the judge offered and said that he would be more than happy to consider a motion to set aside, which has been submitted to the court. So the conviction will be set aside at some point in time once the judge rules on it, I believe. I mean, I couldn't guarantee that, but I would assume, based on the judge's statements made to me in open court, that that would be the case.
Okay. And then the other charges were dismissed, as it's noted here. So basically...
Could we offer a consent agreement right now?
Yes, Member Ortega. Yes, you certainly can. And counsel has already indicated that he is receptive to an offer for consent.
What would you like that consent agreement to be?
Well, the first one would be a $150 fine for failing to notify the board of the arrest and the conviction.
Do you feel there should be anything else involved since it was dropped?
No, I'm just a stickler on them not notifying us.
Okay. I do understand that. Is that a motion?
I'm waiting to see if anyone has anything else to offer.
Okay.
I'm good.
You're good?
I don't have any questions.
So we have a motion to offer a consent agreement for $150 for not communicating to the massage board within the 10 days of the offense.
Okay.
And this is disciplinary, is that correct, Member Ortega?
Yep. Emily Clark, second.
To be paid within 30 days, 60 days, is there a time frame on it?
60 days.
60 days, okay. Is there a second?
Emily Clark, second.
By the way, we agree.
You agree. Okay.
I guess we should have that in there,
right,
too.
Okay.
We'll consent to the agreement as well.
Right.
Chairwoman Bowman?
Aye.
Vice Chairwoman Clark?
Aye.
Mr. Ramsey?
Aye.
Mr. Ortega?
Yes.
And Mr. McLean? The ayes have it. The motion passes.
Thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank
you. Will there be a notification received?
Do they need the car, the badge?
It's up to her. Are you, okay.
I can email it to you, Ms. Khan, if you'd like.
Okay.
Would that work?
And then in the future, because you have occasionally
bring
your card with you.
But
thank
today
you.
It's just...
I need to ask for that.
Because she asked me.
He will email it. We're good.
Okay. Thank
I'll
you.
Make sure Ms. Khan gets it. And will I get notification of this in the mail, or will she?
Board staff will.
Board staff will reach out to you with a...
Thank you.
Okay. Are we ready for 20-119, Tiffany Hahn?
Yes, well, we're ready. It's going to be adjournment. It's going to be moved to another day.
Oh, okay.
Ms. Hahn's case, 20119, Tiffany Hahn, is going to be moved to another date after February 12, 2020. She has a hearing on that day at 2:15 in Mesa Court. So we're going to move to a future date, and I'll find out around the 12th what day that'll be. Either it's going to be the 24th or it'll be in March, okay, based on her court date.
Okay. Thank you. Do we need a motion? Motion to continue? Okay. I move that we continue Tiffany Hahn case 20-119 to a future date, either February or March, depending upon the completion of her court date.
And John Ortega, second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion passes. On E, application review, Jeffrey Denton. Please have a seat. Thank you.
let me know when you're ready.
Okay, yes.
Okay.
Mr. White?
Yes, ma'am. I sent Mr. Denton a letter of notification that, based on his application status, we received a criminal hit from an arrest that happened in a guilty verdict that happened on 2/22/2019. He was arrested in the state of Texas on case 9099-010-77X for possession of narcotics, 4 grams to 400 grams, and possession of marijuana, 5 pounds to 50 pounds.
Would you like to explain,
elaborate? I would, thank you. It's true, the narcotic was a derivative of marijuana. At the time in this state, I was legal to grow medically. With most stupid decisions comes a little bit of pride and a little bit of desperation. I had a little bit of both, and I did something that I shouldn't have, and I was called on it. I was punished, put on probation, fined rather a lot. And I have met all the standards for probation. The only thing I have left is time. And I wanted to thank all of you for allowing me to come in here and talk with you rather than just deeming me unnecessary for my license. I did serve in the military for a while, and due to injuries I sustained when I was 14, I got out of the military, not completely because of those injuries, but in due to a big part of those. And I am also mildly allergic to some pain medications, some of the more severe pain medications, the stronger ones, and some of the more milder pain medications do not work. So at the time that I chose to do this foolish thing, I was in the mountains of northern Arizona growing legally for clients, and I had my own card. So the portion of it that was legal was here, and I made the foolish mistake of taking it to Texas. Regardless of why I chose to do that, it was a foolish mistake, but the reason I did do that was because I had a friend who was dying of ovarian cancer, and she offered me money to bring what was listed as the narcotic, was a derivative of marijuana called wax, which live resin, which some people find a benefit on cancer. She is deceased now, and my friend, in a sense, has begged me. So that was also part of my decision. But either way, it was something I should not have done.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr. White, is everything other than this current and up to date on his license application?
Yes. He had a license before. He's applying for a second time. He had a license lapse.
Okay.
Got it.
So he's an initial applicant again?
Yes, he's an initial applicant again. Yes, he is.
I move we grant Jeffrey Denton his license.
Is there a second?
McLean, I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you. Take care, sir.
I mean,
I will.
Hey, Chun Wang. Thank you. Yes, please.
Ms. Wang, on case application review, was applying for a license. We got a criminal hit from the Scottsdale City Court, and she was arrested for massage therapy practice / advertisement violation on case CR 2019-021938. As of last month, that case was dismissed.
Was she practicing massage without her license?
Yes.
This is a new initial request then?
No, what happened was, remember, she came in December and it was adjourned because her court date was a couple of days later.
Gotta wait.
Yeah, so it's...
And it was dismissed?
It was dismissed, yes.
It was dismissed December 31st, 2019. Is that correct, Investigator White?
Emily Clark, I make a motion that we approve the license for Ms. Wang.
I'll second it. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries.
I learned a long time ago to not hedge bets by talking, so thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay. Hong Yin Chen. Is Hong Yin Chen in the audience?
No, there she is.
Okay.
I don't think so. She has a California address.
Okay.
Okay. And we read to recommend. Hong Yin Chen, Hong Yang Chen, is a application review. Ms. Chen was arrested in 2019 on case 567-1585 for one count of prostitution in Los Angeles, California, by the Los Angeles Police Department. That case was pled down to a trespass.
Misdemeanor?
Yes. Thank you. That's right. Arizona, but you got a felony trespass name. And that happened on 8/20/2019 when she pled down.
They leave us with no legal recourse.
Yes, I know.
We have to give it to her, I guess.
Yep. I move that we issue the license.
Kevin Ramsey, second.
I second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes.
We have one more left.
Olga Gaska.
Olga Gaska is an application review. In January 2016, she was arrested on case CBN GL04101221600492, bringing or harboring certain aliens and was convicted of the charge of alien smuggling, sentenced to 6 months imprisonment, 3 years probation on May 3rd, 2016. She has been released from probation at this time.
And this is a renewal?
Oh, this is an application review.
Application.
Yes.
Could you tell us something about?
It was a mistake. I went and I picked up some people and was going to bring them here. I was going through hard times and in a bad relationship. He turned my world upside down. I lost my kids, my apartment, my car, everything because of this man. And when I went to prison, I took the plea for being guilty and I didn't tell on anybody because I needed to get away, so that was my freedom. When I got out, I found out that my boyfriend that I had, was doing 8 to 15 years. So since then, I got my kids back. I got off of probation early, a year and a half early. I worked two jobs as a caregiver in a caregiving home and a caregiving facility. And I chose to go to school for massage therapy to help the elderly that are in hospice. It was just a bad mistake, a bad relationship, and I'm trying to better myself to have my own business or maybe to do mobile massage for the elderly and elderly homes. And I've gotten everything back that was taken from me.
How old are your kids?
19, 16, and I started over with the surprise. I got an 18-month-old. I didn't know I can have any more kids.
So you sort of have a lot to...
Big surprise.
My kids, my son is in the Army. He joined the Army right after. I sent them to private school. I work hard to pay their tuition. He graduated and went to the Army, and my daughter is going to do the same. And I'm working on my little one. He's going to go to preschool and private school also. I went to ACES School of Massage, and they were really good to me. And there's a lot of opportunities if I don't make it in the facility care homes to give massages. Maybe I can work with the instructors that, you know, that they refer me to other massage companies.
We issued the license.
Did you want legal advice at all, Member Chair?
No.
Madam Chair. Yeah. It's your discretion. It's completely your discretion.
John Ortega, I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed?
No.
Thank you for coming in.
Executive Director report.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I'll do this very briefly. We're still in the GRIC process, the 5-year regulatory review, which began the fall of last year, is continuing, and we are expected to probably appear before them within 60 days and probably as soon as next month. We've had a task force composed of the chair and others on a rotating basis. As we've gone through this process, I know we've had Mr. Ramsey, who's appeared at one of the GRIC meetings and testified, and we've had the chair and the vice chair involved to a certain extent. But all of you have been hopefully kept abreast adequately as to where we're at. And you've already received this electronically, but I wanted to put it in front of you today on paper so it shows up on your car seat when you get home, and maybe you can read it again. The document you have before you is the latest on the issue from GRIC, responding to, through their attorneys, what they want this board to do. And although we've had the task force and some of the members are in the audience, in fact, who have participated, I wanted to later under, I won't do it now, but under discussion for future topics, I'm probably at that point going to suggest to you that maybe it's time to have a board discussion on this document that we've received from GRIC and direct staff as to how you would like it to respond. The task force has and is doing that, but I don't know that each of you are getting sufficient involvement with something which has become pretty critical for the future of the board, which is potential statutory changes and potential regulatory changes. And we can anecdotally keep you up to date with reports of the task force's progress, and you can continue to receive electronic copies of everything that we're doing that's flowing back and forth. But when I look at Mr. Ortega, who has sat up here for 11 years of his life protecting the public, and I certainly have only been here for less than 5% perhaps of that time, the task force may not be the only resource that you would want to have. And then the new members who are here with recent appointments bring a perspective that's not based on statutory history but based on a lot of current events. So when we get to that point in the on the agenda, I may suggest more succinctly what the advantage of that might be. And that's really all I have for you on this. You've already received this electronically. I have it for you today as a reminder and as an irritant. I would draw particular attention to the continued direction from the GRIC that they are not happy with us insisting on language proficiency to have an Arizona massage license. And maybe the board should direct staff to provide some of the materials that were researched and produced by the task force to be brought back for you at a future board meeting with the ability for you to meet collectively in quorum, in public, and discuss the board's reaction to this particular GIRC document and advise the task force and the staff what direction you'd like us to take. We have posted all of you to legally, publicly attend previous GIRC meetings on your board agenda. We've never had a quorum, and we've never had your members showing up meeting a quorum. But not only to be safe, but also to give each of you the opportunity, had you wanted to appear, like the day Mr. Ramsey testified, you would have legally been able to do so. And I think it also showed seriousness by the board to GIRC that everybody here was publicly invited and had the right to publicly attend legally with advance notice. So I haven't talked to some of you really in recent times on the GIRC process, so maybe a board agenda item might be the way to do that, and we could even have task force members provide a written report prior to that or attend that day and testify or whatever, because we have the first chair, Mara Concordia, of the board here in the audience today, and we can't discuss this, obviously. That's going to be probably my suggestion. So I don't have anything more on the GIRC report other than the process continues, and this document indicates that I or we are not successfully communicating on behalf of the board, particularly on the English or language proficiency current statutory requirement, in a way that has not only we have not satisfied them, this document contains additional research requests, our testimony has not satisfied them, mine and members of this task force. They are looking for additional research and declarative analysis on this issue by the board and the task force. So on a discussion about why the state legislature felt that language proficiency slash English is desirable for an Arizona licensee is something which Greg Harris, obviously, I don't know if he's still here, he historically can speak to because he helped draft many of the original statutes. What I've attempted to do at a recent meeting is to indicate, as we sat here this morning for an hour and learned about something which everybody knows about, but we haven't formally sat and looked at it, is the number of licensees who indicate to your staff that they speak English and yet have to show up here with a translator in order to be able to understand the most basic questions regarding their license, seems to draw attention to the fact that language proficiency either is an issue or is not an issue, but we are unable to enforce the issue that's in statute, which requires us to do this, when the application indicates the respondent needs to give an honest answer, and the answer appears to be inconsistent when, on a daily basis, we have applications from people who do not have the ability. I've gone to the lobby. I've attempted to communicate. They do not have the ability to understand myself or the staff with the most basic tenets, or the website for that matter, of how to become an Arizona licensee. So I certainly would invite guidance from the board, instructions or innovative ideas as to whether there is a board position on language proficiency and whether the task force should get direction from you as we go, because we need to be back before them really by early to mid-February. We have to get on their schedule. We have to request to be on their schedule. And we have to respond in writing in advance for distribution. And then we will need testimony in response with the written submission.
Has there been a study or a paper done on these individuals that may not have English proficiency being reciprocity license request?
Madam Chair, Mr. McLean, the vast majority, almost all of them, are coming in through the newly enacted House Bill 2569. Reciprocity was an opportunity for people who want to do business in Arizona, and is consistent with the historical program from the executive branch to make Arizona a business-friendly climate and to promote the ability for people to have a business and not be overly interfered with by the vagaries of regulatory infrastructure. The practical effect of 2569, I would say, is probably just becoming apparent, at least with this industry and with this board, in the last 3 to 4 or 5 months, because the bill was enacted last August. And not only, I mean, and again, you can stop me, Counselor, when I'm going off what I'm allowed to speak to here, but when Mr. White gets our FBI cards back last week, and we have not communicated this type of detail yet to the GIRC because we were there for a routine regulatory review. That has now turned into almost a monthly appearance schedule while we further fine-tune existing rules that might need amendment to the satisfaction or the input of individual council people on the GIRC or the body attorneys in whole. So out of 50 fingerprint cards we got in last week, I'm sorry, 32 was it last week? 30 last week, sorry. 12 were prostitution cases. We are switching from the Arizona Board of Massage Therapy to the Arizona Board of Massage Therapy and review for applications that we cannot tell you are in compliance with the law, based on the paradox of what is submitted to us in writing by an applicant, what is the practical experience of the licensing staff on a daily basis, and that is the proven experience in each one of your monthly board meetings where individuals that you have licensed through us are unable to discuss basic questions from the governing board. So I think at this point, I would like to know what the board would recommend to the task force and to the staff as we proceed to our next GIRC meeting, because if language proficiency by this board is not deemed as the same priority as when the statutes were originated, that would be helpful for that to be communicated to the GIRC. And then if anybody has specific guidance for the staff to process licenses without some of the current components, when you tell us to do a form, and the forms are required in statute, and we give the benefit of the doubt to the applicant, and it's not our position to question if they've attested to it, but when we have CEs that are coming in that are counterfeit, when we have schools that are given to us that don't exist, when we have fingerprint cards for the FBI that have been covered with whiteout after the person has been vetted by the FBI, and another applicant standing in our lobby's name on it, I mean, what would you like to hear? Because it begins at the moment the application is made available on the internet or handed to someone in the lobby, and it goes all the way through to when they get their license and they get their initial hard copy, and then we get a request for 3 more hard copies in the same
way. Mr. Arterton, if you want to discuss this, we can put this on a future agenda for discussion.
Okay, and I apologize.
Do you want to update the board regarding the proposed rules that are present before the GIRC? And
right. So okay. What I would like to suggest, thank you, Mr. Director, is that since we all have a hard copy, let's read through it and perhaps jot a few notes and zip them off by email to staff, and then perhaps put it on our February agenda as an item.
Start a little early that day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because having been at each and every one of these meetings, for me it's a catch-22. So if we will do that and put it on the agenda, thank you. Okay. Summary. Wait a minute. Discussion of license photo identification cards.
Madam Chair, we'll make this very quick, under 15 seconds. We've received a response in detail from the current state vendor that does this. I'd like to ask you to postpone this or table this until our next meeting so we can finish gathering the materials and have the time, quite frankly, to make a better presentation to you. But it would be very easy if the board decides they want to go in this direction. It's currently being done by several other state agencies. It would strictly be a funding request, which we would submit by July 1st.
And we did it several years ago as well.
You got to bring it back.
We talked about it last month. What the funding was the only concern we had, correct?
Right. But the technology has changed because of the counterfeiting problem, which is more sophisticated now than it was when you had your initial photo licenses. The good news is that it would be prepared outside by a vendor, but it would still be done in-house by staff. So staff would be responsible for the quality control and distribution.
Okay. Thank you. Summary of current events. We have I don't think I have anything other than, GERC, which we've spoken about. Okay. Discussion and possible action items for future massage board agendas. We've already taken care of that.
Next month we have one formal interview, four investigative review, react review.
Okay. Okay, so our next board meeting is Monday, February 24th at 9:30 in this room. Is there a motion to adjourn?
I make a motion to adjourn this meeting.
John Ortega, I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. Thank you so much for attending today. Thank you.